Tricia.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the Edge Television Broadcast, Tricia.
Nice to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, near-death experiences is always one of my favorite topics because I feel like we can learn so much from that. And, I like your story. I've gone over it, and I like how that you came from sort of an agnostic background. And, I look at the subtitles of your book and various things. It's very interesting, your story. And, of course, you were on Coast to Coast and several other venues and telling your story and its profound effect on you. And I appreciate you coming on the program tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's great. And I love your background, by the way.
Okay, well, thank you. I think you may appear in that background sometime, too. You never know. But I do appreciate you coming on the program, Tricia. And many years ago, I firmly had moved from the camp of life and death, start, finish, gone, to wait a minute, there's things that are happening in this life that seem to indicate there may be something on the other side. There may be something more to life than what we see, think, or feel in the five sense realm. But let's start with you and your story. Let's go back when you were agnostic. What were you doing before you had a near-death experience?
Well, so what I was doing was I was in college, and I was at the University of Texas, and I was about to graduate, and I had a deep fear of death. I think a lot of people do. There were just these moments when I would be overcome with this thought that someday I'm going to die, and that's going to be it, because I was committed to this idea of being an agnostic, and I just didn't think that we would go on. And I was going to run the Austin 10K. My life had become a little chaotic, and this race was a symbol of kind of greater health and getting back to things that I had done in childhood and high school running. And last thing that I expected to occur was to be in a car wreck that would put me in the hospital, and then I would have to have back surgery. And that's when the near-death experience occurred. But who I was your average college student. I like to go out and study and really, I didn't care about religion. I didn't care about spirituality. It just didn't interest me.
And I think religion always has a sort of a bad flavor in my mouth. I mean, I always, as I said, I began to understand there's a spiritual realm. But it seemed like some ways religion sort of hijacks that. And I'm not going to denigrate religion because some people consider their faith their religion, and the religion to them is good. So I don't want to frame it like that. But there are those that have marred maybe its original intention and diverted it. And that's what really kind of is sad. But I think that keeping it in the spiritual realm rather than the religious realm, then you'll start getting some of the truth that we should know.
And that light and that love can filter through some churches and some religions, and then it doesn't another time. So I see everything in terms after the near-death experience, in terms of love, unconditional love, light, and really just being closer to your soul. So that spiritual realm, of course, is incredibly important. But, at that time, all I had been, and as a college student, all I had been open to was religion. And I saw a lot of judgmental people who didn't care for me, who didn't come from that unconditional loving place. So that's why the near-death experience was so profound.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, it seemed like, when I played basketball with the 20-somethings, I think now, am I going to have a near-death experience here?
It's never too late for one,
So, well, okay, great. Well, thanks. I do want to come back,
Yes.
And I like one of your, and we'll get to this later, but I think one of your chapters is a different kind of life review. I definitely want to get to that later. So if I don't bring that up, I want you to, too, because I like to hear that. But you talk about unconditional love. I think sometimes nature gives you clues of unconditional love, and whenever I think of unconditional love, I think of a dog. A dog, if he does something wrong, he apologizes for that. And if he doesn't do something wrong, he apologizes. And no matter what you do to him, he kind of exudes this unconditional love. Now, why is that? That's in the animal world, but we perceive that as humans.
Yeah, so one of the messages I heard in the afterlife was be like a little child, and I think children also come from that place of unconditional love where they forgive easy, where they don't have this we, as adults, we have a buildup of resentment and anger and trauma and all these triggers, and we aren't new every day, you know, the way a child might be and the way a dog might be, you know, just forgets the past and is in that loving state. And the world works better when we come from this open-hearted, loving state. Mm-hmm. And I know that to be true. Mm-hmm. I also know that there's, you know, a balance, you mm-hmm. know, as mm-hmm. a protecting yourself in this world. But in general, that unconditional love, it really creates miracles. It truly does. I mean, look at how much people love dogs. You know, like, they love us, and we really love them back, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good place to sort of model love and move from there. So being an agnostic, so did you believe that when you die there's nothing?
Yeah, that was my deep fear. I had this belief that, you know, when this body died there would be nothing, and it would just freak me out to think about, wow, this is it. This is all the time I have. And that thought caused a lot of fear.
Well, I got to tell you, honestly, I have had that fear when I think about it. I've said on the show before, sometimes I try to think, well, space is sort of infinite, so I'm going to take my mind and try to project it out and go as far as I can, and I go and go and go because they say it's sort of endless, and so it almost it gets mind-boggling, and I can't deal with it. So then, but sometimes I look at, say, the afterlife the same. What if there isn't anything on the other side? How would I know that? Would I just disappear? I mean, you know, is there anything left of Daniel Ott? You know, I mean, if I try to engage that thinking, I get some anxiety there, thinking, wow, you know, is that because there's a large swath of society that believes that's all there is, and their behavior then really is predicated on that. Like, no matter what happens here, there's no judgment. There's no, I don't have to worry about anything bad on the other side. So I have had that anxiety. So maybe innately, that's why I'm. Have this program to maybe just see how many people can convince me that there's something
right.
on the other side.
I'll try my best, because I was exactly, you know, in that space, and then everything changed during the near-death experience. Really, in those first few moments outside of my body, everything changed. So I don't know if you want me to jump into it, but I was wheeled into surgery after waiting 17 hours, and when my spirit form came out of my body, I looked down and I saw this bloody back. You know, they had my back opened up from mid-back to almost near the hip, and then the hip was opened up, and I thought, wow, surgery's so much more brutal than I thought. And then it just clicked immediately, and I got really excited. I was like, my consciousness continues on, and there's my body, and here's my consciousness. I didn't need the profound near-death experience that I had to be convinced. That first moment showed me that I was seeing these surgeons, and I was looking down at them kind of in this 360-degree vision, and I could see the tops of their heads, I could see my body, and I knew that something essential in me continued on, and I even felt more invigorated. So if you can imagine being more you, so you without any physical pain, or you without any irritation, or you without, you know, any limitation, it's just like this amazing way of being. So this, I was excited. I wanted to jump back in my body, tell all my agnostic friends, hey, we do go on, don't worry. Definitely we go on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the near-death experience continued on from there. That you have my book up there behind you, which is titled Angels in the OR. And the next thing that I saw were these amazing 9-foot beings. And I thought, I didn't even know if I wanted to call them angels. They were just these huge light beings. And the first thing I saw is they had this incredible intelligence that came out of their eyes. They didn't have to communicate with words. They just sent this energy into me and calmed my spirit form. And then they sent that energy through the backs of the doctors, through their hands, and into my body. And I knew that this was a form of healing and intelligence, and that I would walk, and that everything would be fine. And that first moment in the operating room, if that's all I would have had, I would have been convinced for the rest of my life. You know, of course, the experience goes on and in much greater detail, but I wish that I could just impart that joy and that excitement and that knowing to everyone, because now I'm not afraid of death. And I can tell you later, you know, there's been a couple of close calls, and I was in a plane going down, and I was like, whatever, we're wow. going down, I'm going to meet the light. And just, you know, if it's going to be a dramatic way that I go out, you know, in an accident like that, No fear at all. Just none.
I've had several. Now, I've had several near-death experiences, but they weren't the body leaving the body type of thing. One of them was in my earlier years riding a motorcycle. I was invincible without a helmet going down the alley about 30, 40 miles an hour. I hit gravel and the bike was slowly, I mean, it seemed like that's classic slow motion going down, and I saw the ground right next to my eyeball. As I fell off the bike, my hand rotated and hit the accelerator, and it went boop, stood right back up. And then I swore the bike off for a number of years. I turned it into a three-wheeler, as a matter of fact. So that never happened again. But that was pretty close. And another time I'm driving down the highway with a brother in a snowstorm, and the car starts sliding off the highway. I said, this is it right here. So, you know, I've had those moments, and I always wonder, is there interference? And I know that people watching this show probably have had near-death experiences as well. Do you think that there are entities, as you describe them, that watch over us and prevent us from actual dying?
Yes, because I can tell you countless stories of people. Even my grandmother had a story one time where she was between two semi-trucks and one was merging over and she couldn't move over. And then the next thing she knew, she was in front of them, as if she had just been placed in front of these two semi-trucks. And there's so many stories of people who feel that there's been divine intervention in their lives. And I know that after talking, I've talked with many near-death experiencers too, and I know that basically, if it's not your time, it's not your time. Like Mary Neal, you can be underwater for 12 minutes and most people would die. You can be brain dead, like Dr. Eben Alexander. You can go through all these things, and if it's not your time, it is not your time. Mm-hmm. And I guess the vice versa is if it is your time, it is mm-hmm. your time. And so there's some greater peace in that. But I do know that those angels were there to intervene. They were there to make sure that I walked, and they were there to calm my spirit form and to allow me to have this near-death experience. And I almost feel like it was fated, mm-hmm. that it was meant to happen, that for whatever reason, I was meant to have this experience and to be in school districts and, you know, follow that mission that I was given mm-hmm. while I was in heaven.
Mm, all right. It reminded me of the movie series. I think it's called Final Destination. And in one of them, they're telling the one of the high school kids, well, when it's your time, it's your time. He says, oh, yeah. So he's in a car and he's going, you know, 100 miles an hour through lights and various things. He said, well, I can't die until it's my time, right? And I'm thinking, he's going to die, you know, so maybe, but see there in that case, when his intent to die was, maybe fate had already decided that when he hit something, that was his time. And so they knew ahead of time that he was going to do that. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah. It's, I don't know if I convinced you yet, you know, but I wish I could impart how joyful it was to feel my spirit form in that realm. I think the real, and why I ended up writing a longer book, is I think it's that participation, that continued participation with the other side, you might say, that really gives those concrete examples to how we interact with heaven, you know, how mm-hmm. we interact with God, how the angels are still a part of our lives today, and how we can ask for these things. So I think that's that's the bigger proof, you know, one might say, is how it changes one's life after a near-death experience. The after effects are enormous.
In the foreword of your book, you put a scripture, John 1:5, the light shines in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. Why did you put that in there?
Actually, that was Lisa Smart who wrote my foreword, and I partnered with her at University of Heaven. And I think most near-death experiences, not all of them, but most of them see God featured, or the universal light featured, as a light. And some people see religious figures. They see God as a human. They see Jesus. They see figures. But most people see a light. And that idea of, it seemed to me when I, and this is toward the end of my near-death experience, but I looked down at Earth and I saw different souls that were covered with shadows, and then I saw some souls who were connected to their light. And what I saw was that if your light is on, you are living in a place where you're in the flow of God, you're in the flow of love for others, for your purpose, and if there's darkness around you, that is fear. So it wasn't terribly judgmental. It was like, oh, some people are covered with fear. Sometimes that's depression. Sometimes that's pain. Sometimes that's anger. You know, sometimes that leads to horrible actions. But sometimes it's just a self-destructive type of fear that just keeps one limited to oneself. And that when we realize our connection to God, we realize our connection to others, then we spread light, we spread inspiration, we spread joy on this planet, and we really reach out to people. You know, it's a heart-to-heart connection, but it's also a soul-to-soul connection. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's not easy, though. Many near-death experiencers get depressed when they come back because they look out at this world and they think, okay, I've got this mission of love and God, but it isn't easy because there's a lot of people who are hurting. There are a lot of people who are lost, and how do you bring that joy of the other side to people who are hurting so deeply? How do you help this world? And sometimes people feel like absolutely stumped. They don't even know where to begin to help.
Mm-hmm. I see I did ask for stories. If people have quick stories about near-death experiences, go ahead and put them in either the two chats. But our moderator, Jade, look, she just put a story in there. Says, I was churned by an undertow along with many others being pulled out to sea. When I ran out of air, I prepared myself and took a deep breath. I was in a miraculous air pocket and got a good breath. Then a bit later got spit out onto the sand. So people had their near-death experiences. And is it the situation that has changed? Or is it people that are changed? What has changed when there's help given to survive?
Yeah, so I think what has changed is the intelligence. First, knowing that there are angels who actually work through these surgeons. So these surgeons, later, I asked them if they believed in near-death experiences, you know, that wanted to talk about the other realm with them, and they didn't want to talk about these things, but the angels work through them anyway. So I find it fascinating that you can just be in the middle of doing what you're doing. You're just working in this world, doing your job. You're working as a surgeon, and this higher intelligence can work through you. Many people claim to be in the zone, or they claim to be in these places, and that helps them in some way. And at the same time, you might think of this as, well, this is the participation of the other side working to help heal. Mm-hmm. I think we can call on them more frequently than we do to help us in our lives.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, in that motorcycle near-death experience, I didn't think to call anybody. Somebody just stepped in, thank goodness.
Yeah, that happened.
So, Angel, wherever you are, man, thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Got another chance. Stack Stevenson out of the YouTube chat says, my brother-in-law died twice during a liver transplant. He's seen angels when he left his body.
Yeah, so I wonder if those angels that he saw were like the ones I saw. They were close to 9 feet tall. They had these, they were not really male or female. If I had to go one way or the other, I might say male, but they were looked androgynous with this longish hair. Very intelligent, though. So everyone's angels work particularly with them. So they might have a different quality, but these angels I knew I could just trust. They were miraculous. And there's a lot more to my near-death experience. That was just the first moment of it. But I love it when I hear from others who have seen angels. I think that's fascinating.
We have this one here. It says, this person drowned in a pool when they were 3 years old, saw the Grim Reaper, and then his mom saved him.
Oh, wow.
Now, did you ever see the Grim Reaper, Tricia?
No, but I have heard another near-death experiencer, Peter Panagore, talk about the angel of death that was there for him. So I've heard, you know, Howard Storm's near-death experience, which is a hellish one. Mm-hmm. Mine was pure bliss and love and light and really a deep knowing that seemed to come to me. So mm-hmm. everyone gets what they need. At least that's what I believe, that for the most part, people get what is right for them.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take your happy near-death experience, because we've had Mr. Storm on this program, and that was a near hell experience, so hopefully there's not a lot of that going on out there. But okay, well, tell us more about your near-death experience.
Yeah, so the next part of the experience, so I was watching at that point, and it was mostly just an out-of-body experience, that first part that I'm describing. And then the angel said, watch this, and they sent this light through the back of the doctors into my body, and I knew my body would heal. Then the monitor flatlined. So at that point, I knew I was dead, and I wasn't afraid. I was just like, cool, okay, I'm going to take this spirit body, I'm going to go outside of this room, and I want to see what else is going on. I don't want to see how they revive me, and or at least try to revive me. I didn't know if I was coming back or not, and I was perfectly fine with that. I just left the body behind. In the hallway, I saw my stepdad get a candy bar, and this later became my verifiable fact, because people love it when you see something that can be verified later, and even though that's just a small detail, later when I was recovering and back home, I asked my mom if he got a Snickers bar, and she said, actually, at that moment, your dad and I were on our knees praying in the waiting room, and your stepdad came in with that candy bar and made a joke and said, hey, so somber in here, why don't you eat some of this candy bar? And so it was this moment where I think my parents felt my soul going. You know, they understood intuitively there's a connection, a psychic bond, I think, between family members. And that moment showed me something that could later be verified. So that's that vertical perception became important to National Geographic and other outlets that ended up studying this. But that moment didn't mean a lot to me in the moment. I was just like, okay, you know, wish them well, hope everything goes well in their lives, hope he's good to my mom. I didn't know him that well. And then I transitioned to this night sky over Austin, Texas. And I kind of felt one with everyone. And this is what I think is in the heart of most people. So if anyone, you know, is listening and they're in hospice or they're very ill and they're thinking about their mortality, I think that you know at the core of you that all you want, even from people who've treated you badly, even from, you know, all is just to send love and for people to be better to one another. Like, that's the essential goal, I think, is let's all be better to one another. Let's all love one another. Let's just make this life experience a beautiful experience. And so that was my connection to others, is how can we all just get along, be happy, and enjoy our lives? And so I sent this kind of love to everyone that I'd just even passed in coffee shops or, you know, in bars or wherever.
Yeah.
And I was just free to fly free and not be connected to them. Then I transitioned into what might be kind of outer space or something like that, you know, very far away. There were lots of stars, and I felt this intelligence of God coming toward me. And this light was amazing. It illuminated even more than what the angel's eyes illuminated. And in this place, God showed me my life. And you've got behind you right now this beautiful sky with you know, stars. And that's kind of the way it was. But then God just projected my life really quickly, almost like this book that just came to life, like a movie. And so little scenes were popping up here and there, but only the good scenes for the most part, scenes where I played in nature, and I was, you know, a sweet kid who loved to be with dogs and cats and rabbits and just enjoy this world, and God showed me that that was good. Then I'd become somewhat judgmental and silly, and I saw this one particular scene where these people prayed for me, and they had really good hearts, and they cared about me, and they thought, is this woman depressed? You know, why? What's going on with her? Why doesn't she open up to us? And I thought, how silly that I didn't like them because they wore a different type of shoes, or they didn't go to my university. I thought, oh, how totally ridiculous of me to think that way, that I should look into the hearts of people and know people at their heart level. Like, that's what's important. And so I learned that lesson, and then I transitioned into what looked like a heavenly realm. The grass was deep, deep green. There was no death. That's the way I describe it. It was vibrant with life. Each blade of grass was perfect, and the sky was this beautiful blue, and I just felt even deeper peace in this realm. Like, I could relax there for 1,000 years and just, you know, really just breathe and let it all go. But I saw a man who I didn't recognize at first until I looked at the truck that he had with him, but it was my grandfather, and he was much younger than I had known him. He died in his 70s of leukemia, and I was 10 when he died, and then I was 22 when I had the near-death experience, so I didn't even know from pictures what he looked like, you know, as a 30-year-old man. But the truck that he had given our family was in perfect order, in perfect shape, and I think we had it had been in the yard for many years, but we'd taken it to a junkyard. So even the truck was made perfect in heaven. And I heard messages coming from the light. And one of those messages was, be like a little child. Another was, remind them to go to nature. And another one was, love is all that matters. I thought, this love is all that matters. That really sounds kind of simple, God. I need a little bit more. this is simple, but it had a quality to it that was profound at the same time, as if these statements could be interpreted in many different ways, and they were large statements. And so since I was told to be like a little child and I saw my grandfather had chosen a different spirit form, I chose a child spirit form, and I jumped on the back of the truck like I had done as a kid in the country pastures, and we're just driving along. And then at some point he said, would you like to continue on? And I knew that continue on meant go towards the light of God. And my spirit form was like, yes, just that was the most exciting thought possible. And I just intuitively knew that this was God. There was no booming voice that said, this is God. This whole time, I just knew this was my creator. This was the deepest love, the most amazing love I could possibly ever imagine. And so as I was flying toward this light, people's prayers were trying to pull me back towards my body, and prayers felt like an energy or a wind. Mm-hmm. I could hear everything that they were saying. I could also knew who was not praying for me, who was, and I found that kind of amusing. some people didn't care, some did, and some cared more, and the ones who cared the most seemed very passionate about, their prayer. Their heart was in the right place. So as I was going towards the light of God, I just wanted to fly faster into that realm, because suddenly everything about my life that had been painful, so, I'd been bullied as a kid, my dad had been neglectful, my mom was deeply emotionally abusive, and I just had a lot of wounds, a lot of emotional wounds, and I felt those wounds just kind of flying away. They were just like being healed in this place near the light. It didn't matter. Like, everything that was lost was made whole and perfect. So just as that place in heaven, everything was perfect, my soul was being made perfect again in that place with God. And I'd never felt so good. I'd never felt that amount of love either coming from me or coming towards me. It was this flow of love that was miraculous. And so by that time I'd given up on earth. I didn't want to come back. Who would want to leave that place of deep love? But I was stopped, and it was almost like a barrier. And then again, like the angels communicated through telepathy, God communicated as well and said, look down. And that's when I looked down and saw all the souls along this river. And I saw that some were covered in fear, some were covered in this connection to light. And God said, you're going back and you're going to be a teacher. And I said, no. you don't know me. I need to make money. I grew up poor. No way. I'm not going to teach in schools. And it was almost like laughter, or I don't know if I was kicked or hurled or thrown back into my body, but it was just like, ha, 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 ha. You're going back. And so then the wind encircled me and pulled me back into my body. And I am one of those people who did not need to be reminded that I had a near-death experience or remember it later. I knew as soon as they pulled that tracheotomy out of me and I was like in the recovery room, I was like, I died. How long was I dead? Tell me.
Wow.
And I wanted to start verifying things, and I was talking about it, even though I had, morphine running through me. I knew what near-death experiences were. I'd heard of them. I hadn't studied them because I didn't care, but I'd heard of the term, and I knew I'd had one, and I knew that I was forever changed. I would never be that same person. Mm-hmm. And, people have asked, I don't know if you've heard of this theory, that sometimes there's a walk-in spirit. One spirit leaves one body, and then another walks in. I do not think I'm a walk-in. I think I was just changed so much in mm-hmm. that presence of God that the spirit that I was forever changed, and forever, I can never, no matter what happens in this life, I will never lose that connection to God, even if it feels far away at times. It can't be lost.
Did you see God?
I just felt God, and the light of God was so enormous and so beautiful and so profound. But yeah, I did not see an image of God. I don't know if I would have crossed through that barrier, if I would have seen an image or if God would have manifested differently, but it was really just words and light and intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Gladys Kravitz out of our YouTube chat said, my great-grandmother saw angels. She said they did not have wings, just looked like beautiful women in long dresses, and they were singing. Let me ask you, though, in many near-death experiences, when it's looked from sort of at a clinical point of view, they say, well, you know, it's just neurons firing various things. Memories are coming to the fore. The body's producing chemicals, and nothing at all is happening to you. You're not leaving your body. But you said you had the evidence of seeing things in another room. But isn't that the standard answer, though? Have you had any conversations with, say, either an agnostic or someone who doesn't believe in spirituality or even the afterlife? And did you have a conversation with them? Anyone?
Oh, yeah. So I thought I could easily convince all my agnostic friends when I came back to college, and I couldn't. So that was back in 1994. I have spent so many years talking about vertical perception, which is verified facts outside of body, with many agnostics, and I think they're pretty committed, and atheists are very committed to their idea, so they will brush aside those verified facts and believe it's coincidence that someone happened to see one thing when another person didn't happen to see anything, and they're committed to materialism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that material viewpoint. But my friend who I've worked on for years, after she read my book, she said, you know what, Tricia, I spent an hour after I read your book just kind of contemplating what happens when we die. And I was like, yes, at least I got through her head, you know, just a little bit to make her think about, hey, what really does happen? And is there a chance that my spirit goes on? Mm-hmm. I know that, and this is not from a place of arrogance or anything, but I know that I had a higher level of thinking that was possible after the near-death experience. So, yeah, on one hand, in college, I was drinking and experimenting with drugs and not living a great life. So, of course, you know, you can say, well, my brain got better. But I knew that I thought differently after the near-death experience, mm-hmm. that I had psychic flashes. I had many, many different things that were unusual, that were just way out of the realm of the way I normally thought. So I felt like in some ways I'd been upgraded, or, you know, like, mm-hmm. I just had a higher level of consciousness because of that moment. The same way that anyone who meditates for many years has a deeper peace, and those years after the near-death experience, I had much, much deeper peace.
Why is you mentioned the simple messages that you got that were deeply profound. Why is it so hard for people to love one another?
Yeah, that is such a good question. You know, I come back to teaching. So I've taught in every type of school district, from lower income schools to country schools to urban schools to colleges. I've taught, you know, in many, many different crowds. And what I've found is that when you come from this place of unconditional love and you meet other people with unconditional love and you create an environment where they can love one another, then this love is a whole lot easier than one thinks. That a lot of times that creative writing students who simply open up their hearts and write about their families and their lives, no matter what background they come from, they can find common ground and really love one another. I think we forget, and maybe one of the challenges that we're facing in this day and age is listening too much to the news, to media, to other people's viewpoints that are being shoved at us, when we really just take the time to deeply connect one-on-one with people, I think we generally find that we like people. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, you know, if you're at dinner, mm-hmm. with a group of people, there's always going to be some common ground that makes you like something about them, that when people mm-hmm. express their hearts, that we all have this basic need for survival, we all have this basic need for love, and we all have this basic need for entertainment, and that we can blend in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, we asked earlier, did you see God? This Doreen 8951, I think this YouTube chat, did you see Jesus?
You know, I heard the message, be like a little child, which of course is from the Bible. And then in the Bible, there are many, many references to the light. You know, Jesus is the light of the world, be the light of the world. So I have to, you know, I go to battle with two different types of people who listen to near-death experiences. Of course, I go to battle with the agnostics and atheists, mm-hmm. but I also have to calm some Christians down and go, it's still a real experience if you didn't mm-hmm. see Jesus. This is not the angel yeah. of light. You know, this is not right. the devil masquerading. I know the difference between being in the presence of God and not being in the presence mm-hmm. of God. And I was in the presence of God. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have to take into consideration everyone's background. So I didn't have a spiritual experience with Jesus until probably about 10 years ago in a cathedral, and I felt his presence there. So I had a profoundly abusive mom who called herself a Christian, and sometimes that abuse was physical, emotional, and spiritual, and connected to the Bible. So I had some real barriers to the idea of Jesus, and I think a loving God mm-hmm. knew that mm-hmm. I might have freaked out, you know, mm-hmm. by that. I might not have understood that, and I might not have accepted it in my near-death experience. So we're met with love in the places where we need to be met with love. And, you know, Howard Storm had this incredible experience with Jesus. I just saw the light, and I just felt that love. And then later, when I had to finally start healing some of those childhood wounds and addressing those, mm-hmm. that is when Jesus appeared to me in a cathedral. And so I did feel his presence. I do know Jesus to be real. It didn't make me convert into, you know, I go to a Christian church, actually, but you know, it, I'm still so open-minded. Near-death experiences can't help but really just knowing that it's love that matters, and that message can be applied to Christianity in a more in-depth way. You know, that we can stop being judgmental, and we can really reach out to all people in a place of love, and that's the best way to reach people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bible itself says God is love. You mentioned earlier that there was a time when you talk about fear as a shadow, but again, biblically it says perfect love casts out fear. So, you know, and it says he brought us out of darkness into his marvelous light. So, you know, now, as I told you earlier, that I've done this show since 2004, which entails hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of interviews, you know, Howard Storm, probably most people you mentioned tonight. I haven't got that neurosurgeon on. I've been trying to get him on. But what I've learned is that people have stories, and if they don't line up with your theology, you got to listen to the story and see. I think most people are reasonable enough to tell if somebody's making something up, you know, and or not. And so I don't. And here, Tricia, this is my theory right here, that anybody who describes heaven, however we describe it on this side, is going to be completely different on the other side. We're going to say, hey, wait a minute, I thought it was like this, I thought it was like that. And everybody of every religion and every stripe have their view, and I think we're all going to be surprised. I mean, you're the first one, I got to say, that said there's a truck there. You know, yeah. There's... so. You know, but see, I wasn't there, so I can't say that that's crazy, that's not true, because God didn't say he's going to have vehicles over there. But let me ask you something, though. I was going to ask you this earlier, though. You said that, was it your uncle that appeared younger? That seems to be a consistent theme about relatives going back to the age around 30 or so.
Yeah, so my grandfather was 30, around 30, or late 30s, and he looked great, and I think the reason he had the truck with him was the two-part. One was to show who he was, because I wouldn't have recognized him if he wouldn't have had the truck. And two, it was also this way that we relaxed in nature together. And I think that in that realm, you know, just I could make my body what I wanted it to be. I could become a child. He could become 30. He could manifest a truck. So this wasn't to me like a dream state. You know, a lot of people would go, well, that doesn't seem like it should be in heaven. That was my heaven. That was what I needed to do with my grandfather, because it was the most peaceful, beautiful thing I did in childhood. And it was this place where I felt peaceful and happy and full of bliss and joy. And so that's what he wanted to manifest mm-hmm. for me in that space. And really, I think there was a, you know, we're teetering on the edge of, is she going to live? Is she going to die? You know, and you keep going on towards God. And really, it was, I think, at that point, God's choice whether I was going to live or die. And God sent me back. And that part of the near-death experience was profound for me. But you make a great point about who we see over there and the ages that they are. Dr. Jeffrey Long, who I've interviewed, he says that near-death experiencers always meet someone who's actually dead. So they're not meeting someone in this dream state who's alive, but sometimes a childhood friend or family member may have died and they didn't know it in their waking life, and they go ahead and see them in the spirit realm. So we always see people who are actually over there, which is kind of profound and amazing. And I think part of the verified facts.
You said that some of your, I don't want to say battles, maybe you said that battles, but some of your conversations with Christians, you know, there some can be very dogmatic, and you know, and again, I'm not going to go hating on them, because you know, we all go through seasons, we learn things as we go, and sometimes we get excited and we believe something so much, but it's just a lesson to get us through a period, and so we got to be ready to, you know, move on, you know, as God directs. But you said earlier something about nature, that look at, you know, be close to nature or look at nature. And then some of the dogmatic would say, wait a minute, right there, that sounds New Agey, and therefore you could be dismissed. Except I would remind those folks very gently that the Bible says nature itself declares there is a God. Now, I personally love being in nature, because every time I'm in nature, I'm saying there is no way this butterfly just come out of a primordial soup without somebody telling it what to do and design. I mean, and you can go on with almost all the earth and its beauty and splendor and its variance. It's like there's some kind of love behind this. It's, you can't explain it, but you can feel it, you can see it, and you can't dismiss it as random primordial soup coming to life with a lightning bolt.
Yeah, so I agree. You know, this remind them to go to nature was, I think, targeted at this day and age, because how many of us spend too much time on technology with screens, televisions, and this is how we relax? I think that a lot of people are taking a lot of medications for anxiety, depression, and all these different disorders. And if we are in nature and we are meditating and praying in nature more often, I know from the profound healings that I've experienced that nature wants to take some of that negativity, recycle it, and connect us to a more openness to God. And if you pray in nature to God, it seems to magnify it. Then there are some churches that are even taking people outside to pray under the stars at night, to go camping and connect with God in that way. And how beautiful is that? That there's something that God has created this world for us, for our healing, for so much good. And a lot of times we're making things way too complex. Then a lot of things can really be quite simple, and nature reminds us of that. You know, if you're not feeling well, you know, eat more plants, you know, like, you know, and just, you know, don't look for the most complex, you know, chemical substance to fix everything. That a lot of times the body can heal itself. It can be regenerated, and nature is a good way to begin.
Quick personal story. You mentioned camping. My wife and I went camping, and just recently, and these little squirrels, they was all over the place. And so I was sitting there in a chair, and the squirrel jumps up on the back of my chair, and he taps me on the shoulder. He wants a snack. You know, I'm thinking, oh, we love this. This is nature at its finest. Next day, I noticed the propane tank was empty. Turned out that cute little squirrel chewed a hole through my propane tank. And then I'm thinking, it's a rat with a tail. I'm thinking, wait a minute. The day before, it was a cute little furry animal from nature that's tapping me on the shoulder and a wonderful experience. Today he's a rat. I was thinking, okay, wait, no, he's just doing it. So I had to pull back. I couldn't hate the squirrel anymore. But that goes to show, I mean, the lesson I would glean from that to say in people's lives is that, and I think you're going to be talking about some hurt that you probably had and may have been healed from and had to deal with, but our instinct is we're hurt or offended. We want to almost revert back to, I knew you were that way, you know, some of these negative, these feelings, and attack back. And that's what I'm saying about the squirrel. You know, I had to fight that. So, well, you know, I can't hate him. He's not a rat. He's a squirrel. Okay. He's doing, you know what I'm saying? But our trained instinct when somebody offends us or hurts us. And that's the problem with the earth. Everybody gets offended too easy. And I think that's bringing sickness to a lot of folks, and they don't even know it. So explain what happened when you had some hurts. I know you went to Korea and something traumatic happened to you?
Yes. So I had a couple of really good years after the near-death experience where I was just walking around in absolute bliss and love for everyone, almost like this three-year-old child. You know, I'd pass people on the streets, and I was just full of love and joy and laughter, and life was really good for a short while. Then I went to South Korea to teach English, and halfway through that trip, I was sexually assaulted. And as a foreigner in a different country, there isn't any justice. There's not really anything that can be done. So I started developing greater fear and greater anger about the moment. And what I learned eventually is that there is no wound on earth that heaven cannot heal. And there are so many people who take a wound to their grave. You know, they were abused in childhood and they die at 80 and they're still pissed off. And I think one of the messages that I'm meant to bring back is there is no wound that heaven can't heal, that you cannot. And a lot of times, you know, I would pray in nature, I would reach out to other people. There were so many things that I had to do, and it took a while, you know, to get to this place of greater peace. But I never lost hope that that God that I knew on the other side, who sent me so much love and changed so much about my spirit, showed me that love is all that matters. We do not take the darkness of this earth. We do not take the pain. We do not take, you know, everything that happens in war and all the crimes that occur. That's not what we take with us. What we take is the love we give. So my only mission was, how can I add love to the world? And so, you know, just in a small way, some of the proceeds from my book will go to rape crisis centers to help people who, you know, have gone through sexual assault. And of course, all these years of working in public school, I met many young boys and girls who had been either sexually assaulted in childhood or, you know, in their teenage years or young adult years. And pointing them in a direction of healing was a profound thing to do. And a lot of people often misunderstand those kids because it's a really common after effect to either drown it with drugs and alcohol or to, you know, just start behaving badly. And so I was not someone who judged those kids. I always look for what's really going on, what are they suffering from, what can add healing to their life, what can add hope to their life. So for me, a message of hope and healing became important. And whether this was accepted or not, I knew I was just going to go out and do this. And believe it or not, publishers initially hated my idea of combining. I was like, this is just my life. I'm sorry you don't like it. But, you know, like they wanted just a near-death experience story. They didn't want me to talk about, you know, the survival aspect of it, of surviving on this earth. But I think it's more interesting to tell the full story and to go, you know what, even after a major trauma, I can still feel the flow of God's love, and I'm so glad that I've been able to reach many, many people who've suffered in the same ways or worse ways or similar ways or lesser ways, but they still are traumatized. And, you know, everyone has trauma in their life. Everybody, you know, has, I think it's Medical Medium, he talks about how everyone has some level of PTSD, because just horrible things have happened to us. I mean, at the very least, you know, most people, before they find their soulmate or their husband or wife, they've been cheated on, and that's a trauma, you know, or they've gone through a breakup, they've lost someone to death. There's so many things that harm us and hurt us. How do you let go of it? How do you heal it? Mm-hmm. And how do you remember that love is all that matters? Mm-hmm. That's what my mission was and still is.
Now, some would claim that trauma or bad happenings are life lessons. Would you agree with that, or how would you frame that? Or how would you respond to that?
You know, I'm torn, and I think I put in the book that I didn't manifest that moment. So I don't believe that my consciousness, you know, created this moment of sexual assault in South Korea. I believe that a lot of Western women who go to South Korea and teach get assaulted or raped. You know, I believe that, you know, we're thrown into a world where there's some common happening. So sociology is affecting us. You know, the culture of our times is going to play out in a lot of lives in similar ways. And so there's that realistic element to this. But then on the flip side of it, I also think that maybe some souls are a little braver and they come into this world and they're like, you know what, I'm going to take on this, 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 and this, and I'm going to try to help the world in some way because of these events. And we're not attached to the body over there. So, you know, when we make decisions as a soul coming in, we're not thinking about the living out of it. We're just thinking of, well, oh, something really beautiful is going to come of it, you know, that this is really going to help. So maybe on that other side, all I saw was that, you know, one or two people pick up this book and they feel great healing, and I helped them through going through my experiences, or some of the students I met in the classroom began their healing journey because of something I said, and wow, love is all that matters. It's the love that elevated this world, that raised people up. And so that was the hope. So I would say maybe we come in, you know, with making those choices. In that moment, I couldn't think about it. I couldn't think that I would actually choose this because it seemed pretty horrible.
Well, if there's one thing this world needs more of, that certainly is love. Now, this is a question from Curious out of one of our two chats. And it says, this person asked, did you receive any answers as to why innocent children suffer on earth? And you know, Tricia, people use that. Well, if there is a God, he would never, why would he allow suffering of innocence? Or death or suffering of any kind. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so I still keep coming back to that message of love is all that matters. And so that child who is abused and dies early, or that baby who, you know, is killed by its parents, any bit of love that came, you know, from that child or was given to that child, that's all that really matters. And then all the people even who hear about the death of that child and send love to that child and really work to create more awareness of child abuse, you know, that's a form of love too. So it's every situation, you know, we take the physical so serious. And I looked at this more of as a costume on the other side, like, oh, you just put on this body for a while and you're trying to learn these lessons and you're trying to, you know, help humanity understand some of these concepts. And we take it so seriously. On the other side, even if a soul is only here for a short while, it touched some life and created some love and remains in the heart of many different people. Yeah. So even if the baby was just one day old, most times the parents carry that love for that child forever. And there are many evidential mediums, you know, who continue to channel the thoughts of the other side to people. And so there's that element too of, even when the spirit transitions on, there still might be communication and learning and beauty that is still given from that soul to this planet.
Yeah, and I don't think that the writer there is suggesting that they're challenging whether or not God exists. I think they were probably looking for a rebuttal that is frequently for those of us who believe in spirituality and love, you know, would have to address, because that will come to you. That question will come to us from agnostics or atheists, you know, to say, well, if you're a God, if, you know, if you have a God, you know, why is God so mean, you know, and this kind of thing. I certainly don't hold God responsible for that. I mean, I put that more in the realm of free will, that God gave everyone free will. Sometimes that free will includes people doing heinous things to other people. And, you know, I don't know if there's a hell or not that they'll have to go to, but maybe there is. You know, some claim there is. I mean, Howard Storm says he was certainly there. And by the way, Tricia, it seems what I heard over time that 25% of near-death experiences are, in fact, near-hell experiences, where they go and see a darker side of the other side.
Yeah, I haven't heard too many of them, but I certainly, you know, heard Howard Storm's and interviewed him. I also, IANS has meetup groups, you know, where near-death experiencers can meet and talk with one another. And early on, I heard a young man's story where he did too much cocaine, and he ended up in the ER, and he left his body, and he didn't get the sense that he was going to go to a good place. It was like he was looking at the clock, and it was just ticking, and he heard a loud voice that said, "You better get your life right, like you better change your ways." And so he was very taken by that moment. And then I interviewed a student of mine, a college student, who was in the military, and he was a Marine, and he had a near-death experience during when he was overseas. And he was in a waiting place, kind of a heavenly realm, but his grandparents were there, and they were telling him telepathically that they were unhappy with the way he was living, and that they insinuated he was not going to the good place, and so that he needed to return and live differently, which kind of you know, shook him up and sobered him some. So there does seem to be that some people do have these hellish experiences, or, you know, they point to in the direction of a hell, but they still change for the better. So I think the amazing part of a near-death experience is, even if it is a hellish one, people come back and they appreciate this life. They still come back with the same joy to bring love to this earth, this same mission to help others. And I completely agree with the free will. You know, I think I have, and this might sound really strange, and I don't know if a near-death experiencer has ever said this, but I feel like I have less free will now that I've been to the other side and connected with God. Like, I could not be a teacher. I mean, like, I didn't want to be at first, but it was what I had to do because that's what I heard from God. And if I'm off track in any way, I usually get corrected by the light pretty quickly. So I'm just not allowed to veer off the path too much. And I know that that's, you know, that might sound strange, but I think it's just a knowing, you know, of God. And when you know God that deeply, you just can't allow yourself to go too far down a path that strays from God.
So you're a teacher. So during that time of interaction with kids, you've been able to sort of impart some of these lessons that you've learned?
Yeah, so I have told my story to every group of students I've ever had. So, you know, I know, I don't know if school districts are happy about that, but they didn't know. You know, every English teacher gets one day where they tell a story about their life or they veer off track. And so I was like, well, my one day is going to be, I'm going to tie it in some way to a piece of literature that we're talking about, whether it's Walt Whitman or you know, a short story that Pale Horse, Pale Rider is one by a writer who was talking about a near-death experience. But I told my story to every group of students, and some of my students had lost kids. Many of them had lost grandparents or parents. And so there was great comfort and interest in the story. And even if there wasn't interest, I think telling a near-death experience changes the energy of a room. It puts people in a moment of wonder or awe or connection in a way that they normally are not connected. And even if they are agnostic or atheist, I think it's still just fascinating enough to where it captures the creativity of people and makes them think. And so I'm glad I told the story to every group of students, because there are people who turn into programs like this or go to IONS conferences and they know what they're getting. You know, they know that they're going to hear a near-death experience story, but I kind of shocked the students a little. I was like, well, here's this story. And it was a really beautiful experience. But yeah, I knew that my mission from the other side was, I had been given a particular mission because of everything that I'd gone through. So many kids have challenges with their parents. Even if they have the greatest parents, their self-esteem still needs help in one way or another from a mentor or outside force. And so I knew that I could be that for many kids. I could just give that love that was missing and point them in a good direction and ask for guidance. So I asked for guidance from the angels and from God when I was working in the classroom. And sometimes I did feel that energy flow through, and it was always a beautiful experience when it did.
Well, in a bit of synchronicity, we were talking to the Department of Natural Resources guy that works the entry shack. You go into the park. We walked up there and started talking to him, and he told us a story. I mean, we went there to directly interact with him, not just to be sociable. We were intending to strike up a conversation to see if there was something there that we could impart to him or that we would find out, unrelated to just your basic Monday everyday things. And he said that he got involved in a wreck in his truck, and his truck flipped over, and some being, which he described as a man, came and pulled a little guy, pulled him out, and then disappeared. But what he said was that event, he was running from his purpose. His purpose that he knew he was supposed to do was work with kids, and he didn't want to. And so he was driving all around to not do that. And then he got involved in that wreck. And then this mysterious angelic person of some kind, rescue person, must be in the rescue department of heaven, you know, was sent down there, pulled him out. And then he said, and from then on, I started working with kids. So hopefully people can maybe learn their life lesson and find their path without those kinds of incidents. You obviously found yours your way. But I think the greater thing for those that are watching, and maybe you would agree with me here, that you might have a mundane job, but somewhere in that job, you're going to have an opportunity to impart love or to move people in a different direction. And like you just said, change the atmosphere, because we can say, how are you doing? I'm fine. See you later. And we can do that all day long. But to stop for a moment and go deeper, you know, into a conversation may put something in somebody's life that can literally change their life for the better. So I think everyone, no matter what they're doing, they may already be called to where they're at and they don't even know, but there's a useful purpose of them being where they are.
Oh, yeah, that if you are bringing love to this world, it doesn't matter if you're whatever you're doing. You know, that there are so many moments when, I mean, even just a small gesture, and it's not that you're even saying anything, but someone hands you change at a bank or hands you a cup of coffee, and you just feel the essence of their spirit and the love of their spirit, and you're uplifted somehow. That this idea that we're interacting energetically with people all the time is an important one, and that's something that I often remind people when they feel disconnected from God. I ask them to think about the energy of love and what love would feel like if you just opened yourself to it and it descended into your life and descended into every part of your body. Well, sometimes people energetically just exude that peace and that love, and it changes our day just in a brief interaction. Mm-hmm. You know, someone could be wanting to kill themselves, wanting to, you know, end this life, and they have one brief interaction with someone who just exudes peace and love, and it helps them make it another choice. And that's the honest truth. I mean, mm-hmm. that's happened many times on this planet.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I know that it can be even like the pebble in the lake. When you do that one little act that you do could just ripple on. You know, I think the Indians say that life is like a web. What you do to the web, you do to yourself. So hopefully, if we're in the web of life, we're trying to put good things out there, so maybe good things to come back. Dreamwalker says, I had a near-death experience. I had the feeling that it didn't matter what we go through here on earth, that being with God makes all the wrongs and troubles disappear. Everything will be okay. But let me go back to your different kind of life review. I was kind of wondering, and you mentioned that you didn't really see a lot of bad things. So is it that that the other side won't embarrass us with reminding us what we have done, which we may be ashamed of?
Well, this is my thought. You know, near-death experiences are short, and you only have a certain amount of time. And what I was told to change was my judgment of others and to be more open. But probably when I die and review this life in great depth, I'll see everything, every choice that I made, you know, out of free will, and examine that. I'm pretty sure that I will. I don't think I'll have to relive the horrible things that other people did to me. That's just my belief. And when I hear near-death experiences that talk too much about what other people have done to them, that doesn't ring true to me. That isn't the energy of God. God is about our soul's own evolution and our soul's learning and journey, and why rewound yourself again when God is only love? So the person who talked earlier about, you know, that it doesn't matter what we do, it's all healed in heaven, I believe that to be true. That was my experience on that other side. But to your question, my mind, as I was laying in bed, you know, in a body cast and doing this different kind of life review, I was really looking at all the choices I made, and I wasn't happy with a lot of those choices. And I thought, well, God forgave me. Can I forgive myself? Can I forgive myself for the way I acted? Can I forgive other people? And so I went through my life at that point, and then I saw some connections and some ways to let go of things, and then just a way to love everyone. So everyone that I'd encountered, whether they made great choices or not, I just thought, how can I send an energy that will help them in some way? Mm-hmm. And that gets harder, you know, when the offenses are greater. But, you know, on some level, I think that is our soul's hope, is that everyone is better mm-hmm. because of knowing us.
We have a question come in. It says, and this is maybe sort of a religious question. It says, do Muslims have near-death experiences?
You know, I have read a few accounts. I think if you go to NDERF. That is Dr. Jeffrey Long's website, and he has over 2,000 near-death experiences that have been cataloged and looked at, and I know that many of them are from around the world. And, you know, here in America, we're, of course, going to jump on the ones, like there's, I know of one Hindu woman who saw Jesus in her near-death experience, and I know of one Muslim who also saw Jesus in his near-death experience, but then there are other near-death experiences that relate more to the culture that they're in, you know, and the religion that they're in, and so there's many theories about that, you know, in our own heavens, is there a higher heaven above all of the religions, you know, where you're just interacting with God, or do some people, because it makes them feel more peaceful, just kind of go to one type of heaven where they're interacting with the religion of their choice, because that gives them peace in that moment, and the angels and God is kind enough to give them peace in that way. So there's theories about that, but it is more frequent, I think, that you see people of other religions seeing Jesus, and so there is a that element, but but there's plenty of near-death experiences without any religious figures. I think the majority of them, from the research at IANS and other places, they just have God as a light.
Mr. Coffee Lover says, do you think that the world is getting better or worse?
Well, that's such a complex and wonderful question, isn't it? You know,
I'm glad I get to ask you that, right? Ask myself that.
In some ways better, in some ways worse. What I think is better, and I always have hope for the generation that I'm teaching. So, you know, I've taught younger kids, and I've believed in them for so long. But I'm also seeing, the last 5 to 10 years, I'm seeing greater hopelessness in my kids, and I don't know where that's coming from, and I don't know why. I tell them to connect more deeply with one another, to put down their phones. I make my students at the college level get to know one another, exchange phone numbers, and
hang on for a second. Put down. What'd you say?
if you were in my classroom, I'd pick it up. That's a hard question, I think. And in many ways, I love technology. I love this spread of information and this enlightenment and this connection that we have through technology. On the other hand, I am seeing some depression and anxiety running through this young population and this fear of the future. I don't know if this fear of the future is created because of the media and everything, you know, that's out there about how horrible these times are, and we're just listening to that. Mm-hmm. I remind people, like, that's why going to nature resets us, because it doesn't seem so horrible if you just go sit on a park bench and look at a tree. But if you read all these horrible things and you think, oh my God, this world's terrible, you know, like, we need a little balance. We need to go to nature to make this world better in all the ways that we can, and just keep moving forward in that place of love, because no matter how it plays out, I think the greater question is, what love are we adding to this world in our own way? And I always come back to love, because even if the world was completely falling down around me, and this is just my belief, I wouldn't stockpile guns and food. I would think about, how do I interact with other people, and how do I create community, and how do we work together to create community gardens? How do we help one another? That love will save you over hate every time, you know, and I just have to believe that. And even if it doesn't save you, you're going and you're taking it with you.
So when you went on the other side, Tricia, did you see a cell phone?
No, I did not.
So that would be a message to the kids. But really, the online world is a mess. I mean, there's even something called the dark web. And there is an addiction, a technological addiction for the kids now. And they really don't want to work. Whatever work they do, they want to have a cell phone and an iPad with them to do it. And so there's this big void of people that can actually fix things or build things. They're not coming up. But how do you explain to them? I mean, they must know innately. I mean, the hopelessness must come. They have all this technology. They can find out how many flies are in Africa at 3 o'clock in the morning, but that doesn't bring them peace. It doesn't bring them love or joy. It brings them knowledge, and knowledge without love is dead. It doesn't do anything for them. You think that they just have to find out for themselves? You think that you've made a difference? Has anybody actually said, well, you know, what you I might as well try your way because this other, the technological way is not working.
Well, I remind students of balance. And so we go outside and we meditate and we put the cell phones down and I make them assess their level of anxiety and depression and, you know, what they're feeling that day. And then we go meditate and do this and walk around for a little bit outside. And of course, they're going to be happy to get outside and not do work for a moment. But then they look and they go, wow, I really feel, most of them, you know, 80 to 90% of them feel better after 10, 15 minutes in nature and in meditation. And they usually say, you know, I want to add this to my life. Why do I not take out 20 minutes just to go sit outside or watch a sunset? Why am I not doing this if it literally makes me feel better? And so just that real world evaluation, I think, is important. And then making them become a community and get to know one another. I think the difference between a class that sits there just all on their phones and they don't know each other to one that has inside jokes and they're laughing and they're talking and they know one another, the lightness of the mood is so important, and it's just wonderful to see. So I make sure that they are a community and that they at least have the knowledge that they feel better when they're out in nature.
Mm-hmm. So you had the near-death experience, and you came back with a deep understanding of the power of love, and you try to exude that, you try to pass it on, you try to encourage that. But as a, and I don't know if word empath has anything, it would be your description. But as such a person that is deliberate about putting forward love, do you also perceive evil more, or you recognize it earlier, or do you not see it at all because the love just covers it up and you don't see it at all? Do you see more of it, able to identify it quicker, or is it blurred?
That's a great question. And, you know, I love being this type of person when I'm in power. So if I'm giving a speech or if I'm the professor in the classroom, then there's really no reason for me to see evil other than if this kid is a danger to other kids and needs to be removed, you know, from that environment, which doesn't happen very often. You know, we talk about school shootings and kids that are going off the rails, but, you know, in 25 years of teaching, I've removed two or three students, you know, from my classroom and said, no, we cannot continue, you know, with you in this classroom. Mm-hmm. And it's usually mental illness and behavior problems that are occurring at that moment. So I love being this person when I'm in charge of giving a speech or when I'm in power. When I'm not in power in certain situations, of course, you know, the situation in South Korea where my power is taken away in some ways, it's frightening, you know, because I feel so deeply and then I don't understand the level of darkness that some people go to. You know, do I pick up on it better? I'd say not, because even in those situations where, you know, I mean, that are criminal situations, my honest wish is that they're just better people from this point forward. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just always see the light of divinity and the hope of divinity and redemption. You know, I don't work in a jail system. You know, I'm not, you know, in a place where I see, you know, serial killers or, you know, hardened criminals or that type of environment. And I'm sure that people who do, you know, it's easy to categorize humanity and say that it can't be rehabilitated. But I still can't help seeing, in most cases, you know, that light of divinity. I mean, I do believe in punishment. I do, you know, like I do believe that some people have to go to jail because we don't have a better way. We don't have a way to spiritually clear them, and, you know, make them whole and well. Mm-hmm. Until we do, you know, that's the society that we have, and that's, you know, we should protect the innocents. Just as a classroom, you know, and I have had to remove those three students. I didn't leave that student in there and just keep sending him or her love because they were a danger and a threat to everyone else. So, you know, everyone else, the love becomes, well, everyone else here in this classroom has to keep learning this lesson. So, tough question. I would say I'm not that good at it. Like that in general, you know, I kind of see the good in people.
At least you have the opinion. I guess if somebody is beating you up, you're not going to say, hey, I got a lot of love for you. You're going to call the cops, right?
Yeah.
You got that groundedness there to say.
Yeah. I'm in Texas. You know, we have guns here, you know, like, and we believe in protection. You know, like, it's not,
Okay. Yeah. I have had this graphic up a couple times. And a floor worker says, what is angel activating meditation?
Well, you know, this is, I just listen to the angels sometimes, and what I think I'm good at doing is I'm good at helping other people connect to the energy of God or the energy of angels. And so I tried in this meditation to simply allow people to energetically feel their angels around them. And that's my hope, is that, you know, I know that I had two amazing guardian angels. I believe that most people are maybe not interacting with their angels, but I believe that we have them. And it's, the Bible talks about them, you know, like there are the angels who are here to help us and to make our lives easy and beautiful in some way. You know, if you don't like something, just move on. I mean, that's what if it doesn't resonate with you, don't worry about it. You know, that's what I tell the most people. Go in the direction that you feel empowered. Go in the direction where you feel love. If you like my angel meditation, great, it's free. If you don't, forget about it. You know, find something that connects you to the energy of heaven, whatever that might be, whether it's your church, whether it's your community group, whether it's you going to nature and just looking up at the stars and talking to God. I think all of us, no matter what our belief systems, would be a lot better off just going and looking at the night sky and talking to God.
And it sounds like what you're saying is, as much as we can, we need to default to love when we can, and certainly when it's appropriate, and maybe when it's not appropriate for that matter, but always default to love. And to your angelic point there, the Bible says, be careful to entertain strangers, for some have entertained angels unaware. So what that's really saying is, assume, act as if all humans are angels. Would you treat them different if you knew they were? Treat them as if they are, and then you won't have to do some explaining later of why you treated them that way, right?
Right. And I think of, you know, think of all the special needs kids who come through classrooms. Some of them, I felt like they were just true angels on earth. And I had a group of students bullying, you know, one young girl who was a special needs girl. And a man, and some of these girls, you know, had it all together. One was, you know, a cheerleader. One had wealthy parents. I kept them in my room for an entire week, and I made them, you know, think about their actions, talk about their actions, and then I just showed them that this young child came from this place of pure love. Every day she brought flowers to people, just wanted to hug people, and was in the state of pure love. And I said, she's got it down more than you do. You know, like, you have all the advantages in the world, you know, looks, wealth, you know, like a great education, and you're treating someone who doesn't have your chances poorly. I mean, that to me, that just blew my mind, you know. But there must be true angels on earth.
I don't want to get too political, because we haven't really done any political conversation here, but did you see the Democrat debate
With Marianne Williamson? No, I missed it. I did want to see
now,
that.
How did you know? I mean, there was 20 of them, and you picked the one I was going to talk about. Why did you say that?
Because I just saw it come up online that she talked about love. And so I was like, good. You know, she probably won't be the candidate, but I think it's wonderful that someone is interjecting love. You know, then the last election, I forgot who it was, but I think it was a Republican, and he talked about fighting human trafficking. It was Kasich, John Kasich. And I was so happy that that issue was brought up, because I think, how can we all be free if human trafficking exists on this earth? You know, if there are people who don't have any hope, you know, if there are little kids carrying rocks up mountains every day, if there are people lost in, you know, sex trade, it just bugs me, you know, like that issue of human trafficking. Why is that not more important? And then why isn't love more important? So, you know, we talk about so many different issues, and we don't talk about some basic things. Can all people be free, and can we have a more loving world?
Yeah, and I keep hearing with this border debate, they keep saying there's, and I know that there's sex trafficking, there's children trafficking, they're buying and selling them, using them as props. Man, it's a mess. But, you know, I mean, that's just in this side of the hemisphere. You know, there's all around the world, there is just so much gross evil that's out there, and you have managed to stay pretty positive, and from what I can tell, and even though you look out at this world and see that, yet you retain your focus on love, but you're stable in that if you may call out evil where you see it as well. Is it true?
Yeah. So, you know, when I look out at this world, I do want to make a difference in areas like human trafficking and certain issues on this planet. You know, I do want to help in the ways that I can. But if I get overwhelmed by the sadness of it, then I can't do anything. And I heard a near-death experiencer, Ingrid Honkala, say this, and it's really stayed with me. She said, imagine if you had this huge house and every bit of it was messy. Every bit of it was messy. You would be overwhelmed if you had to start and think of cleaning the whole thing. But if you just take the kitchen table and if you just clear off the dishes and then just do the dishes right there, then you think, well, I made a difference right here. And so the only way that I think I can just deal with the mess of the world is to go, okay, I'm focusing on this classroom, I'm focusing on this issue, mm-hmm. and I'm one person, I'm going to make a difference, and I'm going to keep talking, and I'm going to remind others to clean up some little area that they can clean up. And if we all did that, it would be better. And, you know, here's the crazy thing. You know, human trafficking, for instance, it would only take $10 billion to end all human trafficking. And that might sound like a lot of money, but that's how much we spend on blue jeans each year in America. Like if everyone just didn't buy blue jeans for an entire year and put that money into organizations that could help, then we'd end human trafficking. And, you know, you see people donate so much money to rebuild Notre Dame or different places. And I think, aren't people important? You know, can't we help people in certain situations? I find that more important than a building. You know, like I think sometimes priorities are out of whack.
Mm-hmm. Would that kind of go along with the bloom where you're planted theory?
The what?
Bloom where you're planted. That is, as we spoke earlier, that, you know, and as we get toward the end of the interview, Tricia Barker, obviously, people are watching the program. It'll go up on YouTube, podcasted, TuneIn Radio. So it'll go out, you know, whatever we're able to provide as far as a platform for you and the message. So what would be your message of encouragement to those? Two things I want to know. That they have hurt and trauma that they're still dealing with, maybe as young people or even now, in abusive situations. And secondly, how can they maybe modify their worldview in that when they have a chance to kind of focus more on love in every situation, try to keep moving toward love in various situations and people they meet?
Okay, so two parts to that. It's love for self and love for others. And when you have a trauma or when you have something that needs to be healed, having a connection to the other side helps. Having a connection to God and the angels and assisting with that healing can help. So say you go see a therapist, ask that God work through that therapist. Ask that your angels work through that therapist to help you. If you try a new modality, there's rapid eye release for trauma that works with a lot of people who have PTSD from the military and from life. There's all kind of modalities, healing modalities you can find for yourself, and you can ask that these be amplified in some way through the other side. But just that focus on the self, even if it's I'm going to feed my body, you know, more fruits and vegetables, and I'm going to nourish myself each day and do something kind each day for myself. You can see animals that are abused, you can see plants that don't get enough sunlight, and you can see that, you know, they wither and that they get afraid. And sometimes that's what we have. We have a fear in ourselves, and so we need more sunlight. We need more goodness, even if it comes from our own heart to ourselves. Like, you know, love your own heart until you feel stronger and put yourself in safer situations and better situations and communities. I mean, on one hand, churches provide that. You know, they provide some inspiration. And so I think that finding the right church or finding the right organization can give you some of that sunlight of the Spirit. And sometimes it's a long process, but committing to it and starting it is important. And then as far as looking out at the world, there are people who are doing amazing things. And this is what we forget about when we're watching the news, for instance. There are people every day who are winning prizes and making breakthroughs and accomplishing life goals and dreams and are doing really amazing things. I mean, you know, take me for instance. You know, here I am 25 years after this accident. I actually do have a book out, and that was a huge, you know, a huge journey, and it was momentous, you know, like to get an actual publisher to believe in me and to put this out here. And as an English professor, that's so exciting. You know, like I accomplished a life goal, like it or not. You know, like people all over this planet are accomplishing things in small ways and big ways. People are making breakthroughs. Look for the good and try to add more good to this world. And as far as the horrific things that are happening, if you always frame, well, how can I do something to help? So when I was overcome with sadness about human trafficking, every income tax return that I get, I give some money to help with human trafficking. And it hurts because I'd like to go buy blue jeans sometimes, but I go ahead and make that donation and I think, God, this is somebody's life. You know, this is somebody's life that will be free because of my donation. And that is way more life-giving and way, way more powerful than anything. If you don't have the money to give, you know, there's always ways to give in person and to find ways to give back. And a lot of times, I know I've suffered from depression. I know that a lot of people have. There's a tendency to just get focused on the self, but the minute you get out of yourself and you're helping other people, everything changes. And I think that's one of the reasons God told me personally to work in classrooms. I'm always happy when my feet hit the ground and I'm there to help other people. So there is some power in getting out and helping others.
All right, very well said. Don Morgan just threw in here. I said, thank you, Tricia, for coming on the program. And others are putting out some positive messages too as well. Tricia Barker, I appreciate you coming on the Edge Television broadcast. Space Cow says this was a great guest.
Thanks.
So the accolades are coming in. So people appreciated what you had to say. Very positive message and affirming message that we all can learn from. Tricia Barker, can we have you back on the program sometime?
Oh, yeah, this was a lot of fun. Great show. I love it. And I'll be checking out lots of your shows.
Okay, well, hey, you might have to be braver than you think. But this show can't be categorized because if you look down the guest list, it's not a one-trick pony here. We'll interview anybody for anything they got to say because I want to hear everybody's point of view. I want to know everybody's story. I think we listen to each other, like you said earlier, without so much judgment. You know, we'll all be so much better. Tricia Barker, I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Loved it.
Okay.
Have a great night.
You too.
And goodbye, everyone.
Okay. Bye-bye.